Right, I'm here with Nadine Andrews, who wrote the report that we're discussing today. Nadine, there seems to be a fairly strong kind of assumption of what of the need for the arts to have a positive outcome on the world at the heart of this. And that's really nice because so much, well, it seems nice to me that so much kind of academic research ends up being really dry and kind of tries to be non-ethical for kind of as a start point, not unethical, but just sort of aethical. What drove that?
Personal values, I think. However, so the ethical side of it is something that was kind of important to me personally, and also to Rowan, who I was working with. But when we came to do the research, we kind of kept it out in a way. I mean, it was in there, but it wasn't. We weren't saying this is what we think, you know, the sector should be doing, because we didn't want to influence people in that way. So, but by including certain questions relating to, I don't know, whether people have got a sense of social responsibility, you know, the thing about helping others with change, you know, some of those competencies, and the caring for nature, that there was a way of testing the extent to which people agreed with these values without directly saying. So it's only really now in the report that we can be explicit in our interpretation and say, well, this is what we're interested in and this is what we found out.
The report is about the skills and competencies need to thrive within in the arts and culture sector within kind of changing world. Do you see there being a kind of a fundamental split between those people who are attempting to thrive within the structure as it is now and those who are seeing the potential within that flux for disruption and transformation of the structures within which the arts kind of manifests itself?
There may well be. I don't think it's not something that we tested.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably not that clear cut. I think that people, well, some people are really constrained in their options. So I don't know. Perhaps you're a mother of young children. You've got to work. You've got to go back to work. to the job that you were doing before, and you know, there might not be that many options for you, even if you're not that happy in that job, to find something else. But otherwise, or some people might be hanging on for a pension or, you know, something like that. But I think otherwise, people create their own, you know, their own circumstances. But some people are just stuck where they are.
Yeah, but because some people don't seem to be, that from outside you can look at their circumstance and say, why don't you change it? It looks really obvious. And that people actually are stuck by assumption rather than by circumstance.
Yeah.
And it's fear of
doing something, well, it's uncertainty again, isn't it? It's fear of the unknown and what will happen if I leave and I haven't got a definite job to go to and what will I do about money and all those kind of things that you can understand, all the anxieties.
And I guess the skills and competencies side actually dovetails with that really well, because some of them are about assessing what's going on outside and some of them are actually self-reflective. And that actually it's in the relationship between those two that one assesses whether or not you can actually afford to change, you know, the degree to which you can disrupt the pattern of your own life. So actually
it's the reality checking, again, which is really important. So, which isn't just about checking your own assumptions, but whether a decision that you've made is still appropriate when everything around you has already moved on. You know, is that still the decision you made last week, is it still the right one today?
It seems to me that the problem you're going to have with this report is that because it touches on just about every area of human experience, because that's what the arts does, that actually the difficulty is going to be summing up the findings in a way that has any sense of finality to it, when actually the big value from it is the ongoing conversation off the back of it. And I guess, in a sense, then you mentioned at the beginning how the process of doing it was in and of itself evidence of what you were looking for. That actually there's this kind of self-reflective element to the research itself. and that by summing up at the end and saying, actually, it's what people do, how people run with the questions we've asked, that's as important as the findings, that actually there's a kind of a demonstration of the potential of that kind of thinking within the art sector, which is really, really exciting.
Yeah, and it's about being in control and not in control at the same time. Yeah. So yeah, we might have a whole load of interpretations, but as soon as you put the research out there, yeah, people will come up with all their own ways of interpreting and using material and stuff. But for me, I the most valuable conversations that I've had, where I can see, you know, where there's been something tangible, is the small conversations where you're talking to someone about their specific situation, and I can draw on the research to you know, illuminate what's happening in that situation, and that's where the real value is, and it can't, which is why it's so difficult to sum up the findings, because it's the application, and the application is different for every person in their particular situation, which changes all the time. So
did the feedback from the participants indicate that they saw it in some way as a kind of useful sort of personality profile? Because a lot of the questions, there seem to be a lot of similarities between what you were asking and something like the Enneagram, where actually you could discover the kind of person that you were through your own answers.
I was aware that might be how some people might view it, but I really didn't want to go down that route of creating archetypes or something.
Yeah.
Mostly because, that there may be certain overlaps with other personality profiling things, even Myers-Briggs and stuff as well, you know. Yeah. But because people, it's so complex and it's so nuanced. Yeah. So sometimes I might do more bigger pictures things in a particular situation, and sometimes I might not use it as much. And what makes the difference in those situations is, you know, you can't break it down and analyze it and say, right, in this situation, you know, everybody will behave like that. So I'm really resistant to going down that route of creating personality types. However, there was some work we did with the data, which if we had a larger sample, we might have gone further down that route.
Yeah,
we could have gone further down that route. But because we're asking across, you know, 80 odd variables, when you get to the kind of the sub samples, it's not a large enough sample size. So we kind of abandoned that because it was too tempting to go with it and say, you know, create these different archetypes, but then it might have just been really misleading and not that useful. So we sort of left that one alone.
I guess that's where the sort of the Enneagram model of fluid archetype works better than a kind of Myers-Briggs. This is who you are, and this is how you'll behave.
Yeah.
There seems to be the antithesis of that kind of prescriptive thing, whereas it seems to be much more open-ended, that you actually discover what your dispensation is towards and go, maybe I am a bit more positive than I realised I was, just through answering the questions.
Or at this point in your life.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, today, right now, I feel, you know, I can draw on these things, which yesterday I wasn't able to do that well. Or, you know, so if people aren't used to working with that level of complexity and nuance, and they want, you know, these neat, tidy, you know, simple solutions, you know, but just tell me what to do, you know, I can't.
Yeah.
We can't produce a model that does that. It would be meaningless.
No. Which is, I guess, why you ask all the questions about intuition and kind of self-motivation and the ability to kind of be agile in your thinking in those kind of environments.
Because the whole point is you have to make sense of it for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then do the reality checking and all the rest of it. But, yeah, that's the point.
It strikes me as a really, really important piece of research. And research that I hope that the findings of which can be... manifest, and particularly online, in a way that allows people to interact with the data in an inspirational way.
I think really it's suited much more to online, because it's not, you know, in a presentation or written report, you're forced to be linear about it, and it's the material isn't linear. Oh. So it would actually suit a website way better. You know, you could start with those diagrams, and then, you know, it'd be quite a natural way of going deeper and deeper, and or sideways, or, you know, wherever. That would probably be much easier for people to follow than I think so. I think a website would be the best resource.
Well, I hope it happens. Thanks, Nadine.